And we are back. Hour number two, Richard Neer in tonight. Steve Summers, first night back, didn't want to tax him too much by a 6.5 hour gig. So I'm here from 10 until 1 o'clock. And we'll be taking your phone calls most of the way. But right now, Mark Sheldon joins us from MLB.com. He covers the Cincinnati Reds, who've had a bit of a renaissance of late. Mark, welcome in. How you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. How are you?
Good, good, good. Well, of course, the reason we're curious about the Reds is one Matt Harvey, who got a start today. And I watched his four innings and had some impressions. What were your thoughts?
Well, he was definitely teetering on the brink of really losing the game a few times. You know, the Reds staked into a 4-0 lead, and he got into some trouble in the first inning, gave up a pair of doubles after 0-2 counts. He lost those hitters, and then Sandoval hit a long drive, and if not for a very nice catch by Adam Duvall, that could have really opened up the inning, and they could have lost the lead, and who knows what would have happened after that. And then after the third inning, after the belt home run that he allowed to lead off, and then another hit, he found it and retired six in a row with five strikeouts. So it was kind of a tale of two different outings in one.
Yeah, and that's very familiar because that's exactly what he was doing with the Mets. And after the game, he would say, well, look, I got six guys in a row or seven guys in a row out. Yeah, but look at all the hard hit balls and runs he gave up first. So, yeah. You know, it's a tale of two outings, but unfortunately in the end, the ERA still is around 7 or 8 or whatever it turned out to be because of that.
Yeah, the one thing that he was able to do, and he owned up to it, that there was something, but first he thought he was tipping his pitches. He couldn't figure out why they were on him so well. And why, even though his velocity was there, it just seems like his fastball was just not, it was very hittable.
Yeah, well, that's the thing with Harvey. I mean, he got, even with the Mets, he got up to 95, 96, usually in the first inning, and then it would slack off and, you know, he'd live around 93. But that's a major league fastball. You can get guys out at that. But, you know, he seems to get ahead in the count. Like you said, he'd get to 0-2, and then he'd throw a meatball. He'd groove one, and they'd get hit. Hello, did we leave? Did we lose Mark? Okay. Yeah, I'm not hearing Mark, so we're gonna try to get him back here. I will vamp until then. But I watched the Harvey outing, and it's just you know, when somebody is gone, and you found this, and I said this earlier about Robinson Cano, you know, a lot of the stuff that was negative tends to get soft-pedaled when somebody's around. Keith Hernandez, I guess, was on with Boomer yesterday and talked about how he spoke to Scott Boras about Matt Harvey and said, hey, look, you gotta rein this guy in because he's really hurting himself. And then you get, you know, he's an arrogant guy. He didn't have many friends on the team. You know, you're hearing all this stuff after the fact, whereas during his time here, well, you know, he went to Ranger games. He dated supermodels. He, you know, was kind of a lone wolf. But you didn't really hear the bad guy, Matt Harvey. You know, you didn't hear not a good teammate. You didn't hear any of that stuff. And, you know, it's kind of like, you know, it's easy when somebody's not around to badmouth them. But to their face, when they're still around, that's a hard thing to do. Do we have Mark back? Mark, you there?
I'm here.
Okay, good. Yeah, we lost you there for a second. But, I mean, Cincinnati seems to be a better environment for him, don't you think, than New York, where there's less media and less pressure on him?
I think it would help a little bit. Obviously, in New York, there's a lot of different reporters. And the one thing that's really different is the tabloid media doesn't exist in Cincinnati. You know, when he's out away from the ballpark, there aren't people, you know, taking pictures of him from the New York Post or the Daily News or anything like that. So he's not going to be on page six or the equivalent thereof in Cincinnati if he happens to be out enjoying some nightlife. Cincinnati's a good town, but it's obviously not New York in terms of hustle and bustle. And I think it will do him some good. He's also going into a clubhouse that honestly is a very good clubhouse. Although the team is losing, they've maintained a pretty good demeanor among themselves. They really want to win. He's got a chance to be impressionable on some very young pitchers. So And of course, this being a walk year or a contract year, it would behoove him to have a very good off the field behavior, because no one's going to want to take on a guy that's got some, you know, even more baggage.
Yeah, and how does he fit into that rotation? Is he a fourth or fifth starter? How long is the leash if he continues to pitch like he did today? What are your thoughts in terms of his future with the Reds, his immediate future with the Reds anyway?
Well, I think he's going to keep getting built up. They were hoping they can get him into like the 90 pitch range today. He got the 77 pitches, but those were, you know, three stressful innings before he made the mechanical adjustment and got better. But he had a very good first start. He went four scoreless innings with only a hit. And I think if they can get him up to like five or six or seven innings, he fits in very well in the number three or the number four spot. But honestly, I don't know what kind of future he has with the Reds. I think if he can get it back as a starter, the Reds will probably turn around and flip him before July 31st, because that's really where the value is. They sent Mezzarocco to the Mets with a lot of cash, basically the balance of the contract. And in order to get something out of Harvey before he becomes a free agent, they would probably want to, you know, get some value out of him, see how high they can get, and then trade him again to a contender if there's a team that needs him. So I don't know how long his future is, but right now they have him while they have him, and they really did need him because their rotation was struggling. The guy that he replaced, Brandon Finnegan, was really having a tough time. He went back to AAA to figure some things out. So they really need some stability in the rotation, and they've had some lately. That's why they were able to break off a six-game winning streak, and they lost two to the Giants, and they had a nice game today.
Yeah, you know, talk a little bit about Mezzarocco, because the Mets have been desperate for a catcher since Darno went down, and Plawecki is down as well, and not that those guys were any great shakes, but Mezzarocco did have that one good year, which got him a big-time contract.
Yeah, and honestly, he's had some really just horrendous luck since. He got the four-year, $28 million contract after being a 25-home run hitter and an all-star in 2014. Then in 15, he tore the labrum on one of his hips and had to have surgery, actually in New York. And then the following year after that rehab, he tore the left shoulder labrum, had to have surgery, and then he needed to repair the other hip, also a partially torn labrum. So he's had three major surgeries. And then last season, he got hit by a pitch from Quintana on the Cubs and broke his foot, and he was already struggling as it was. So he's only played, going into this year, 95 games in 3 years of that contract, and now he's making $13 million this season. And he lost his kind of status as the number one catcher because Tucker Barnhart became a Gold Glover last year and kind of overtook him and left Mezzarocco to be a support player. He's a great guy, though. He's never going to be causing trouble in the Mets clubhouse. You'll never see him on page six. He's always going to be a good guy. He's accountable. Everyone likes him. Obviously, he's got two friends in the clubhouse already there with Jay Bruce and Todd Frazier. So I think he's going to fit in very nicely with the Mets, and maybe he can resurrect his value. He's obviously coming to the end of his contract. He'll be a free agent after the season, and I'm sure he's going to want to look for some maximum market that he can get, considering what he's been through.
Well, I'll tell you, I mean, I was impressed early on with him in working with Zach Wheeler. Obviously, today didn't work out too well, but you know, he seems to be a very active catcher in terms of communicating with the pitchers and, you know, basically calling an aggressive game as opposed to just laying back and letting the pitchers do most of the work. He seems to be much more of a field general. Did you find that with Cincinnati?
Yeah, I think he got better as he went along. He was not known originally as much for his defense as he was for his offense when he came in to the big leagues. And he definitely developed into a very good game caller and a good catcher. He definitely got better at throwing runners out, and he certainly was the guy that would step in front of the home, you know, in front of the plate, call timeout, and redo the signals to the other players. And he definitely was active for sure, like you said. Although the one thing that's kind of hit him in this down spiral he's been in the last couple of years is that before he left the Reds, the team was the starters were 0-21 when he caught, which was very interesting because he wasn't catching when they were winning. Of course, they had some really not good pitchers either in that stretch, but I think Barnhart was a better defensive catcher than he was ultimately, but I think he was a very good catcher, especially during that one big year he had.
Final thing before we let you go, you guys had a great series against the Dodgers over the weekend. And I was shocked, you know, knew the Dodgers had been off to a rough start, but they're playing the Miami Marlins, and their records are almost identical. It was just like, wait a minute. You know, you have one on one hand, a high payroll with a lot of big names, and then you have a payroll where they've basically traded everybody except Real Muto. I know the Dodgers have some injuries, but boy, what is going on with LA?
Yeah, it's hard to say. $200 million doesn't get it what you used to get, I guess. But I think obviously you take away Seager, you take away I almost blanked out on the other guy they're missing. They've been sacked.
Peterson.
Honestly. And yeah, thank you. And so I think that has a lot to do with it. Their offense isn't very good. They're, you know, Kershaw has been hurt now, and I just think they're missing very important pieces that they're counting on. And right now, if they go really gangbusters the rest of the year, they'll be struggling to get to even 85 wins. So they really have dug themselves in a hole, much like the Reds. And this is a very disappointing year right now for them.
Yeah, no question about that. I mean, a lot of people pick them to be in the World Series this year, and that seems to be a long, long way off given their start. Mark, thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate your insights, and we'll talk again.
All right, it's my pleasure. Thank you.
Okay, Mark Sheldon talking about the Cincinnati Reds from MLB.com.